The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation. Play by Adams, Haxby, Tiemann, Lytle, Dorn, and Juergens. 8:47 we begin. We have the Honorable Dwayne Rue from the City of Beatrice in the audience. Hello. Welcome to the rest of the public. Mr. Mulder. Up first, consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held April 1st, 2026. Approve claims through April 15th, 2026 in the amount of $1,097,559.01. Accept claim number 260400081 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC in the amount of $204.26 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve District Court Summary Fee Report and Register of Deeds Fee Report for the month of March 2026. Approve cancellation of check number 4269 to Roger Harris with the amount of $2,000. Approve designating the county clerk and county attorney to manage the door access for all county property. Approve calling for RFP for financial advisory service for the jail project bond financing. Proposals are due May 7th, 2026 at 5 p.m. We do have a change to item 7. Ms. Haxby, do you want to take that?
I just want to pull that off for a motion after consent agenda.
All right.
And then I think there's a correction on number 6, you said?
Yes. Pull number 6 off also?
No.
Okay. I would like to make one change to the agenda later on, too, just as we're going through the consent agenda. The public hearing later on, after committee reports, will be at 9:30, as advertised, not 9:15. With that, I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, pulling item number 7 for consideration after other consent agenda items.
So moved.
Moved by Adams, second by Haxby to approve consent agenda, less item 7. Any other discussion? Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Ms. Haxby, item number 7.
I want to move to approve designating the county clerk to manage the door access for all county property.
And this door access, what that means is she will have the ability to change the access in the computer system. Each office will still have control over who is allowed into their office. County properties are controlled by the board, but we do allow each office to grant or deny access to individuals. This would be for all county property, rooms, etc. So motion by Haxby to approve the county clerk. Motion by Haxby, second by Adams. Mr. Adams. Did you have additional?
No, I just
more of a comment that, I mean, this is just to, it's keeping a list at this point, because we do want each office to decide who has access to their office. Every elected person will decide who has access to their office. So it's keeping a better track of who all has access and making sure that the names correlate with the person carrying the fob so that when we can run audits on who accesses what office, if that ever needs to happen.
And you would keep that on probably running tally anyway, who has access to where,
right,
regardless.
Right, unless somebody requests a change, I assume then that's going to be changed. So
that would be basically the same as we have now, just point of contact. Additional question, concern, comment?
So the clerk's office is going to work in close contact with the emergency manager and the sheriff's office to make sure that all the necessary entries are available for law enforcement in emergency situations?
Every office.
Every office is going to have the option, I guess, to know who comes in their office or who's allowed in their office.
The concern was there's a bunch of people that didn't work here, random people, things like that, that were still on lists, so cleaning things up. Basically managing that list. Not controlling it, but managing it, just being the point of contact. If there'd be any issue, it would still have to come to us because we have final say on that in the long run anyway. You all do. Motion by Haxby, second by Adams. Additional discussion on this item 7. If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Consent item number 7 passes. On to the regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 26040000181 to Hard Rock Quarries, LLC, in the amount of $204.26. This would bring the total amount of claims paid through April 15, 2026, to $1,097,763.27. This is a company that I am associated with. Moved by Dorn, second by Juergens to approve. Discussion? Seeing none, please vote. 6 in favor with team and abstaining. Motion carries. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items for the Board of Supervisors meeting. Anything that's not on the agenda? Seeing none. This would be the time if anyone does want to speak on anything. All right. Welcome to everyone. We will move on to committee reports. Building and grounds, winter lights. Mr. Dorn. Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning. I just had a few things. The new sliding door on the east handicap entrance has been installed. So Adam and I will finish up that little entry area now. I did take bids for painting the extension office. Larry Shelley came in at $4,800 to paint it, so we're going to go with him. Still getting bid, or I have 2 bids for the floodlights, but I'm just going through that yet. So we'll be replacing our LED floodlights in the courthouse yard, and they do have the adjustment feature that you can tone down or turn up the colors and change the colors on them. So that's what we have going on.
Any tree updates? You're looking at some trees?
Yeah, grants. I'm still working on that. That's been kind of slow, but I have been talking to some people and getting there. So, yeah, and that grant will be due by June 31st. So.
Fantastic. Dave, I want to say thank you from the board again. We haven't told you thanks for a long time, but you always are looking at everything, trees, outdoor, indoor. It's always nice to see the way you take care of this. You take care of it better than if you lived here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Trees always felt, when I did start here, we did have a lot more trees, and I've always felt bad that our courthouse doesn't have very many trees now, so time to get a long-term plan going where we'll have these big monstrous trees on the corners of the building.
So. Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Mr. Dorn, anything else? Equalization, we didn't have a lot of information in equalization this morning. I did see we got the bills. Part of that $1,097,000 in claims was the billing from MIPS for the reevaluation of Beatrice. I believe altogether that was somewhere around $435,000. I don't know that, but I believe that's off the top of my head. So that was a chunk of change there, but that's trying to bring everything back into level across the county. This one was specifically towards Beatrice. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket item. Applied Connective Technology. What?
Large ticket item.
Go, Eddie.
I had it. Oh. Applied Connective Technologies, IT Services, $19,771.33. UNL, January Finance and Personnel, Employees and Salary, $29,917.34. Beatrice Concrete Company, Rock, Gravel, and Hauling, $48,616.48. Sap Petroleum. Fuel oil, $14,255.91. Inheritance fund, MIPS Incorporated. This is the commercial and residential that Eric just spoke about and some language I don't understand, but it was $436,789.50. And out of the emergency management fund, City Beatrice, 911 quarterly services, $61,494.27.
That 61 got a lot more emphasis than the 400 side. We'll also, of course, be looking at our insurance that will come up due third quarter again. Human resources, employee relations, we've had ongoing discussions with the FOP, and that might come up here at this next one. Law enforcement emergency management, Mr. Lytle.
Gus, you got anything today?
Nothing today.
Lisa?
Sure. As you know, you have on the hearing that starts at 9:30 this morning, you have your packet in front of you. We also have a planning and zoning meeting scheduled for Thursday, not tomorrow, but next week, Thursday. And on the agenda for that will be a hearing at 7:15 for Bev Acton's Classic Catering for a small event venue. And then also on discussion will be the finalization review of the livestock regulations with the hopes of setting a public hearing then moving forward with planning and zoning for that. And then to begin a discussion on data centers as you had requested, so for conversation.
Any significant changes on livestock that you can share with us that you're looking at?
You know, we took the committee's review, you know, that came from your draft. The A and B setbacks were lessened, and then setbacks from facilities C through F were kept the same. And then it was a matter of there was conversation about those applications that are out of state, presented as out of state applicants. There is some draft of as to impose a larger fee for those out of state. Again, realizing the commission realizes that this is the beginning conversations, you know, through the hearing process, and then they can review again. So,
have they looked at lessening the larger setbacks at all, or that's just the talk has been stay the same?
So C through F remains the same. There was not conversation that alluded to changing that. You know, they looked at the matrix, you know, as a tool. Matrix Life University of Nebraska, the matrix tool that we don't require it as a kept score. You know, in some counties, they'll say if you receive a score of 85, you're an automatic and you can bypass the public hearing process. That public hearing process is very important to the planning and zoning process as well, you know, to allow for individuals like today to come forward to learn more about the project and plus, you know, express their concerns or support.
And that was part of that thing of the legislature where they were going to shorten that, get rid of public hearing almost, or make it more difficult.
LB 663, I'm assuming that you're talking about.
That did not pass.
To be determined, you know, as far as what challenges that brings to us. At this particular time, to this point, we've been able to make the timelines that's being asked for, but as always, you know, we're always, our attorney's office is always reviewing, you know, the processes, so.
Anything else from the board for Lisa or the sheriff? Anything else, Mr. Lytle?
I don't believe so at this time.
Road and Bridge, Mr. Juergens.
Yeah.
Road and Bridge, Miss Axley.
Got her throat on you.
She's in the middle of typing.
We are working on the Hickory and Adams bypass forms. I need to finish filling those out so that NDOT can put it in their system and continue forward with the engineering and environmental process. 49 tree letters were sent out last week. Mark got us the draft of the one that we're going to send out to all landowners. Amanda's going to finish reviewing so we can get those sent out. Gus Construction did start on Chestnut Road. I saw them there yesterday, I think it was. So they're working on, that's one of the bridge match program bridge replacements.
They'll give it to us. We're just
and late. Doran said 136 will be closed in August to repair a culvert.
Anything else for Roden Bridge? Mr. Juergens.
I did pull out a 4-foot evergreen tree out of the right of way here last week.
Was it because you hit it?
Some people might say that. I'm going to
So it wasn't, you didn't go in to pull the tree out. You may have smoked it and had to just clean it up.
No, it wasn't a bird. No.
I did call Mark yesterday, south side of town. There's some of the pipeline folks there on Lilac. There's some new gravel there that was not for those pipeline people. It was just scheduled by the operator this fall. It just happened to be put on at that time. Mr. Zollner called. He wasn't happy with how bumpy the road was. Mark was going to go out and clean it up. I will say he didn't get out there yesterday, but...
He did get out there yesterday.
Oh, I could not tell. It's still just all laying where it was.
GPS, he was on there.
Darn it, because it looks the same at this morning at 5 as it did last night at 10. But I was going to say it was good that he didn't touch any of it or push any in the windrow, because it was all, even though it was bumpy, it was getting driven down in the middle of the road. I don't think he was out there.
I double-checked this morning.
Shoot. All right. Well, so much for that.
You know, it doesn't do with it, but I think it was Monday, Mark had the little John Deere tractor we purchased a couple years ago, maybe now, with that road drag behind it going over some of these roads. And that little son of a gun works good. That really works good. Filling potholes and stuff like that. So.
No,
it's... That would have been yesterday. Yesterday? Okay.
It's constant process. Non-hard surface roads just take some work. Anything else for Roden Bridge? If not, the sheriff has invited Tracy Reuter to give a presentation on erasing rural addiction. Would you folks give your name and address for the record?
I'm Tanner Coho.
You want address too?
Do we need address, Tom? Yeah, address or town or
okay,
some information so we can find you if we need to.
Oh, okay. Tracy Reuter, and I'm with Nebraska City as well, CHI Health St. Mary's, Nebraska City. So thank you for having us come. I'm actually going to share some information. We'll kind of pass some both directions. And people So we approached the county sheriffs about a partnership to work on, so everybody got their paperwork first, kind of follow with me. Everybody got one? Perfect. Okay, so CHI Health St. Mary's back in September of 24 received a federal grant. That's a HRSA grant. It's a Rural Communities Opioid Response Grant. People hear the word opioid. That's not the only substance that we're dealing with. We know in southeast Nebraska a lot of times it's alcohol and meth would be our one and two. And then we do see some opioids that are coming out of this particular grant. You can see that it was a $3 million grant. You can see the grant period is from September of 2024 to August of 2028. That is my contact information. We actually have a healthcare navigator that I wanted to make sure her information was on there, because that's where referrals go to. I'm going to talk briefly about the grant, and then I'm going to let Tanner really take over about the outreaches, the things that we would like to partner with law enforcement in Gage County on. But really the purpose of our grant is really to get individuals into treatment and recovery for long term. We are being measured on the grant. Are we keeping them in recovery for 3 to 6 months, 6 months more? Our target our service areas includes Gage County, and you can also see that it's Odo, Nemaha, Johnson, Pawnee, and Richardson. It's southeast Nebraska. And we are looking at individuals that are at risk for substance use. It could be that they're in treatment, recovery. We're just trying to really put wraparound supports around that. It could be families and caregivers that are impacted, because we know that substance use affects the families. And then we do have an emphasis on justice-involved individuals. You can see that our goals of our federal grant is treatment and recovery services, developing our workforce. Tanner is part of that workforce, and we are working on hiring another peer support worker down here. And then we're putting wraparound services, housing,
It could be connecting them to treatment, to outpatient, inpatient treatment. We do have a partnership with Blue Valley Behavioral Health down here and across the counties that we serve. We also have a treatment center, Mission Fields, that we have partnered with. All of the services for this grant have to happen in the rural communities. So I cannot, if you have your zip code and you want to send someone to Lincoln, that's great. We can connect them. The grant cannot serve it. Dollars have to stay in our rural communities. It's about building our infrastructure and our resources around that. So about the Comeback Era program, so under the goal, we are really trying to do something different. I always like to share, when we went to D.C. the first time we have required trainings, one of the fit people that we met was a judge. Her name was Judge Linda Smith from the Michigan area. She called herself Lock 'em Up Linda. And she would say, I would tell people all the time that would come across the bench for me, if you do not do something different, we're going to have this exact same conversation the next time, you know, that you get caught. And fast forward, her daughter ends up with a sports injury. She will tell you that her physician was her daughter's first drug dealer, and she was her daughter's second drug dealer, became addicted to opioids, went to the street for heroin. And she said by the time she found out that she was pretty much down this path of this addiction, she's like, once I found out, she's like, oh my gosh, I'm a judge. What am I supposed to do, right? So she actually, this program that Tanner is going to talk about, we mirrored it off her program. Her daughter went to treatment. She said it was some kind of retreat thing that she went to. She was in school, was in and out of treatment 7 times before she stayed in recovery. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. We send them to treatment and they should be better. Well, we just handled the acute stuff. We did not handle all of the other social factors and the mental health and things that are that. So one of the best practices is really partnering with law enforcement that we have found across the country, and we want to implement it in Nebraska, is pairing with peer support. Tanner's going to tell you what peer support is and then how the program runs with law enforcement. We've implemented this last year in July with Nebraska City Police Department. Officer Lance was going to come down and share his side of it, but he actually ended up ill this morning, so that did not happen. So I apologize for that. So now I'm going to pass it on to Tanner.
Hello, my name is Tanner Coho. I'm a peer support specialist for the state of Nebraska. I'm not from here. I moved here from Orange County, California in 2017 to get off drugs. And I did. February 12th, 2017 was the last day I used drugs, but I convinced myself I was doing perfectly fine because I was drinking. It's legal. I was going to Casey's to get it, not going to the drug house to get it. And so I basically just switched. Fast forward to 2020, I went to Salvation Army in Omaha with 104 guys with 2 counselors. I knew when I left I was going to drink, and I did. I was in liver and kidney failure, and I had to call my dad, and he answered the phone, and he said, is it time? And I said, yes, I need you to take me to the hospital. So we did, in a place called Mission Field in Nebraska City, said they would have a bed for me. I didn't know where Nebraska City was. I didn't even know it existed. But I went there, and I went to treatment, and I did whatever they told me I had to do. It was the first time that I did something for myself. And while I was there, I went to their transitional living. I got a job at a little cafe called Spring Garden Cafe in Nebraska City, and I served pancakes to a bunch of old people and met them and had them rooting for me, and it was the first time I'd actually had a community in my whole life. And while I was in treatment, I had a lady tell me, I think you'd be good at peer support. And I said, what is that? And she explained it to me. It's basically, in short, I use everything I went through to support people that are going through what I was going through today. It's lived experience. It's real life. I've actually gone through it. Not always every person I meet with, I can say I've gone exactly what you've gone through. But they can see the struggle. They can feel it. They can hear it. And we can work together. So I always tell people I'm not here to tell them what they should or shouldn't do, but I can give you advice. I can give you support. Now, when we turn that into what we're doing with this program, the Comeback Era, eradicating rural addiction. When I got to a rural town, Los Angeles County has 11 million people. I landed in Nebraska City, and I was like, what's going on here? There's not a bus system. There's not, like, how do people get around? I was shocked, and on top of that, the amount of support in rural towns is not as much as even Omaha or Lincoln. So we partner with law enforcement. We go on these outreaches. So let's say someone recently overdosed. Law enforcement makes contact with them. They go to the local hospital. Anyone in there can make a referral. So a nurse that saw them, you know, hey, you're just in here for overdosing. Let me make a referral. The cops that met with them, they can make a referral. What that does is it comes to me, and me and an off-duty officer will go to their house. If they're hanging out at McDonald's and that's what the referral says, we'll go up to McDonald's and I'll knock on their door. Obviously, I'm with the cops, so that's going to scare them right off the bat, but I have to go, don't worry, no one's in trouble. We wear these shirts. It says Comeback Era. The officer will also be wearing one. And 9 out of 10 times, the officer I'm with knows the person we're going to see. They've had a run-in with them before. They're either a repeat offender, whatever the case may be, and they just say, hey, I want you to talk to my friend Tanner. It's that simple. We've only had one experience where someone didn't want to talk to us, and it wasn't the person. It was the person's house they were staying at. So I have a conversation with them, and I ask, what do you guys need? Like, what support do you need? Do you want to go to treatment right now? And if they say yes, they jump in my car and I drive them to the treatment center that's partnered with us. So we're trying to close the gaps. We're trying to break the stigma. The way I explain it, I'm sure everyone sitting in this room knows at least 4 people, 5 people on hand. They're not out robbing people, shooting guns in the air, doing horrific things, but they're making that same choice every day, which is to pick up drugs and alcohol. Not everyone out there in these treatment centers are bad people. We're just regular people making mistakes, and that's what we're trying to stop. So that's what I got.
Yeah, and then Tanner actually, so one of the partnerships we have is an agreement with Wellbeing Initiative. So he actually goes through training, certifications. There's ethics around that. I don't know if you want to talk about your training.
Yeah, so I work for a company called Wellbeing Initiative. It's a peer-run organization. Everyone that works there has lived experience for their own pathway. So peer support is cool in the way that we have peer supports for codependency. We have a peer support girl who is a cancer survivor and helps people with cancer. Mine's obviously the alcohol and drugs thing. I use my lived experience through everything I went through to support people going through it.
Any questions? So if you guys decide that this is a good fit for your area, we would like to partner with the Sheriff's Department. There would be an agreement. We've already talked about that there are some training dollars, and then there is some stipend dollars, quarterly stipends, to reimburse the department or the county. So it's not for the officer, because we cannot get into overtime with this particular grant. This is not one of those grants that allows overtime, but we can say that we will do X number of visits, and here's a quarterly stipend, and then you can apply it however the sheriff's or the county wants to, is how we're working the agreements. We do the same thing with Nebraska City Police Department and Oda County Sheriff's. So, questions? We've given you a lot of information in a short time. I know we don't have a lot of time.
Are you coordinated with the local drug courts? I know that
we've been working with probation and drug courts. Tanner just spoke with drug court when they had their graduation, but I don't know which.
I partner with the drug court officers in Odo and Nemaha, so they'll send me referrals. I'll go out with them. I go to their graduations to work with people that have just graduated to come to the peer report groups I do. So. I also run recovery groups. They're free to anyone that wants to come. On Mondays in Nebraska City, we do 3 groups. This Monday, there was 27 people at the first one, 16 people at the second one, and 3 for the third one. Fall City on Fridays, I'm at their library. I also do recovery groups there. There's 2 groups, so we do that as well. And we partner with drug court, probation, people that are struggling with the normal thing. Like AA, I love it. It's a great program, but for me personally, I struggled with it. And instead of just saying, well, I got to keep trying, I opened my eyes to a lot of different pathways to recovery. So I'm not like someone that's dogging AA, but if someone's struggling with it, I'm going to say, hey, dude, this is what worked for me, and this is what worked for this person and this person and this person.
Yeah, there's other 12-step programs.
A lot of groups and pathways to recovery out there that I'm just trying to broaden people's eyes and say, hey, we're all different people. Recovery is not a one-size-fits-all. Like, what works for one person, it might work for the next one, but it also might not.
You want to talk about your jail
support
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, so I go into jails, prisons, crisis centers weekly, and we do recovery groups in there. It's really cool being able to see guys that are in there for over a year from the first day I worked with them to the day they get out. There's two gentlemen from Odo County that were over a year in jail. They're in peer support training right now. So they got out, they came to groups, they went through the training. The Comeback Era grant actually paid for their peer support training since they were doing all the things they were supposed to do. So now they're on a pathway to support other people that are in jails, that are in incarceration, because that's their lived experience.
So usually when people come in, they ask for money to do something. You guys aren't asking for any money. You're just asking for the ability to partner with our sheriff's department in jail and help our folks.
Yes.
I'm trying to see a negative here.
Yeah.
I was too.
There's really not. And, like, for the most part, every police officer I meet, they're like, dude, thanks. You're making my job a lot easier. And, like, we joke around and... You know, over 3 years ago, I would have never imagined my job would be partnering with law enforcement. No offense. You know, but, like, it's a cool thing, and I've also seen a lot of the officers I work with say, like, man, you've really changed my mind how I look at this stuff. Right. And that's the coolest part for me, is to just, like, show, like, these are just normal people experiencing something that, you know, not a lot of people can understand.
I'm an alcoholic. Ask Gus.
Yes.
Yeah. And the cool part, like, I was a person who never thought I was gonna get out of this life, and just from what I got married 8 months ago, I bought a house. Like, I'm doing things I never thought were possible, and I'm just trying to show other people that are going through this, like, dude, if I can do this, you can definitely do it.
I can't see any downside to it. I think it'd be great. Hopefully, the sheriff is receptive to that as well. You have Councilman Rue from the city of Beatrice here also. Chief Jay Murphy in Beatrice, I don't know if you've talked to him. This is the sheriff, but Chief,
right.
Chief Jay or Chief Murphy here in Beatrice.
Yes, he was there. We had a meeting February 17th.
With the city?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, with everybody at that time.
And the hospital also?
We haven't made it up to the hospital yet. So part of this training, there's lots of little caveats to this grant. One of them is to make sure MOUD is available at our physicians so that people aren't having to go to Lincoln. What I have found out over the last 4 years, I know that this is a new grant. We actually had a grant previous to this. I didn't have a lot of experience with substance use. I've been very fortunate with that. But the one thing that I have learned, it is a chronic brain disease. It literally changes the brain, and it takes a good 18 months to reset. So when people have, like, if people is a pre-diabetic and you just had a milkshake or a piece of chocolate cake, you just relapsed, right? We judge it differently, and I think we're trying to get people not to stigmatize. All of us cope with different things in different ways. Some people maybe smoke. Some people do other things, and this is just a different way of looking at how to help people. And some people have had lives that I can't even possibly imagine. And that was what they used to cope with their lives, right? So the one negative I will tell you, I'm going to be up front, this grant, we will continue to fundraise and stuff like that, but hopefully we can use opioid dollars. We're hoping that our opioid settlement dollars, if we can show that we're doing good work in our community, then that opens up the door that we can sustain this long term. That's the goal. That's the seed money. So I would say the one thing that we're always looking for is how do we sustain this. I know each of the counties receive opioid dollars. This might be a way to partner and to continue that work in your jails or in your community as well. I will say law enforcement says that this is work. They're dealing with these individuals anyway. This is just a prevention piece, and they're not having to deal with the crises on the back end, is what we're starting to see in Nebraska City area. Go ahead.
How will you cover Gage County? I mean, you're really, you have somebody.
So we are in the process of hiring another Tanner. We realized really fast that our, when you write grants, I don't know if anybody has, you're just kind of putting numbers together and you think that you have capacity, and we realized really fast we're running out of peer support. So Wellbeing Initiative is in the process of hiring a second peer support worker that would be more designated to this area.
Yeah, and they did get someone hired. And in the meantime, while she's getting her training and everything finalized, we have a guy in Lincoln that's going to come down here in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. To cover.
His name's Cameron.
Yes.
Any questions for Tracy and Tanner? Sheriff, do you want to touch on this at all, or does this sound like something you're interested in?
Well, I can't really add much to what they've said. I think it's a very good program. Actually, I think they've got a beta program coming up here in Auburn, don't they, for
yeah,
too long?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I'm sending two corrections officers, one deputy to that. Actually, I think we make money because they pay us to go per applicant.
Do.
So that's a savings to the county as well. So you really can't say much bad against program. I think it's got all pluses for it. If we just make it work out and get things finalized, I think it should be. It works someplace else. It's got to work here as well. So
fantastic, yeah. Mr. Adams.
I just want to talk to Tracy. When
thank you, Sheriff.
Off yeah. The over here for a second.
Over here?
Yeah. You can step in this room.
Watch your step. Be careful.
No, you're not. You're not.
Okay.
It's just no.
Anything else for Tanner? Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
We do have a timed event in 7 minutes. Prior to that, we'll continue down the agenda, so we'll skip over that 9:30 public hearing. We ask for a motion to accept or reject RFP for grant writer.
I move to accept and award the...
I'm sorry, I didn't read that right. I'd ask for a motion to accept an award. The RFP for the grant writer from Merchant McIntyre.
So
moved. Motion by Haxby.
Second.
Second by Dorn. Do we have any discussion on this? Do you want to go through what they submitted? See two
of
you.
I mean, we're going to have to work through an agreement now that they've responded to the RFP and then they've been selected. So that'll be the next step is reaching out to them and working through an agreement. But we'll likely do a year and a one-year agreement to start.
Say anything on there about that's one of my questions. Did they say on there for 1 year? Is that what it was? Or just monthly?
No, that's what I had in the RFP.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I would like to have us have them consider to be charging the same amount as what the city's being charged, though, because that was a little bit of an increase, and it was an increase from what we had originally started with Merchant McIntyre. So
I think that's through negotiations.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I would like to see. That we
let's do that before we get a contract with them, then, and
pending. Should we change the motion to pending a contract agreement with the company?
That would be fine with me, Mr. Dorn. Are you all right with amending the motion to pending?
Yeah.
Contract with the Merchant McIntyre. Motion by Haxby, second by Dorn. This has been a long time coming. This will be very good for the county, I believe, to have a grant writer located in D.C. there to work on some of these. Additional question, comment from the board? I would like to thank Ms. Haxby and Ms. Hill both. You guys have both brought in a lot of money for the county. Ms. Haxby's gotten a couple grants, one for two mill and overlays, and then another for two concrete expansions. Ms. Hill ran our ARPA program, which was from the feds. That ended up going to the broadband project that was bid out. And then, I don't know, there's dozens of little ones that you've brought in. But that's ended up at over 600 grand, too. Over a million now. So, I mean, those are things being done above and beyond normal duties. So I want to thank both of you for that. This will be nice to have somebody that is looking, and we can put some of this on because that is their actual duty. Motion by Haxby, second by Dorn. Any additional questions? If not, please vote. 7 in favor. Let me see if we turn that back on.
What happened to Tillman?
I'm trying to get my lamp switched to.
I don't know.
Well, I have a flashing yellow.
There you go.
Bingo. 7 in favor. Motion carries. We have 3 minutes here. I'm going to say, before we get into an FOP discussion, I would like to recess for 3 minutes before our... Oh, okay. Well, we won't recess.
Yeah.
Lisa, do you want to start with your recommendation from P&Z before a public hearing?
I can do that. I'd rather come up here.
I'm sorry. Well, that makes more sense.
So you have in front of you the Planning and Zoning's recommendation for action, and you also had the packet, what we reviewed a little bit. This particular site is located in an A2 area. It requires a half a mile setback based upon the AUs that it will house, which is in a level C facility. Roy Mulder is the project manager, part owner in that particular facility. He will be presenting his project today to you. The site plan includes 20 acres, 8 barns to be included, and he will also address some of the current industry set standard challenges that we've seen poultry producers come to us with, as well as they lessen the bird counts per building. As I recall, when the first application came into us, those applications were for 250 AUs per building, and so industry has changed somewhat, and so they'll chat about that, how the industry for smart chicken has changed. Your application and documents, Roy will go through his application. He's presented the day-to-day activities, an overview, flock management, manure management, mortality disposal practices. There's roads information, the current operations that he is running right now, the well review. There's a setback map that was completed by Chris Witolski, our county surveyor. So as you hear testimony coming up from landowners, you can reference that particular map to that particular residence that's there. Also, there's documentation on the NWEE's inspection. In addition to the Title 130's manure stockpiling regulations, there is the Nebraska animal, the matrix score sheet in there as well. Also, the review that was completed by Mark Kunke, our road superintendent.
Lisa, will you pause for one moment?
Yes.
I will ask for a motion to go into public hearing to hear support and opposition on the public from the public on special use permit number 2026-2 for the placement of a facility C poultry operation to be located on a tract of land in the southeast quarter, southwest quarter, in the southeast quarter of the southwest quarter, section 8, township 6, range 7.
So moved.
Devon Township.
Second.
Moved by Adams, second by Lytle at 9:30. Please vote. 7 in favor. Please continue, Ms. Wigan. Are you done?
There's a few other things. My apologies, but there's always more. In your packet also is the meeting review, as I said, with the road superintendent, but also included the township review and the road expectations of bringing it up to the specs required. Cortland Fire Chief has a letter in your packet as well. They've had a meeting review with Roy. Roy has his well review, and then there's additional information on Roy's tax statement itself. At the public hearing, there is a information in there that was offered to us at the public hearing. First was a text that Dennis Rosine had received in concerns from Kim Janacek. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right, but also the Nebraska odor footprint review, and there's a list of the sign-up sheets. Going back to the motion made by Planning and Zoning, the motion was to recommend approval on the basis that the location and land use conforms to the viable regulations in 6.4 of our regulations and complies with the 7 guidelines as stated, including meeting the setback requirements in addition to they had completed the livestock matrix scoring as well. So.
And that's unanimous?
Yes, we had 5 there that night and 2 absent, and so that was
5-0 with 2 absent for making that recommendation.
Any questions for Lisa before we go over to the public?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. We'll have Mr. Mulder present first, and then we'll give 5 minutes for each other person that wants to give any information, or do you want to do three? I guess we usually do three. We can do three. If the board has questions, we can ask additional information from folks. I guess I would ask probably Mr. Mulder present this side of the project first. We'll take comment from the public and public hearing, and then have Mr. Mulder come back up afterwards so that we can ask any additional questions. As you folks come up, please give your name and address for the record, and then I will swear you in. You are in public hearing.
Morning. I have a handout with some information on water usage.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
That's right.
You're welcome.
Mr. Mulder, I'll have you give your name and address, and then I'll swear you in.
Roy Mulder, 6005 East Gage Road, Firth, Nebraska.
Can you please raise your right hand? Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
I submitted an application to build 8 chicken barns, as Lisa described. In northern Gage County. It's next to the current chicken barns that I started growing in 2018. Ash Road Poultry is going to be owned by myself and another investor that wishes to remain anonymous right now. Lisa has given me a list of things that I need to present, so I'm just going to go kind of follow her list along. I think the information is in your packet that she provided for you. The first one, of course, is the application. You have a copy of that. The second one is a survey. You have a copy of that. It's done by Chris, showing the 25-ish acres that was laid out and deeded over to Ash Road Poultry. Explanation of operation. Ash Road Poultry is going to be an 8 barn site where I grow chickens for Smart Chicken. I currently own and manage 38th Road Poultry and another facility for another man, Hot Lunch. I grow for Smart Chicken. I grow organic free-range chickens. Their headquarters used to be in Tecumseh. Now their processing plant is in Tecumseh. The chickens then go to Waverly to be processed and prepared for transportation. The barns are 43 by 510 metal construction. They're kind of similar to a pole barn type construction, but they are finished on the inside and, of course, insulated and heated. We put bedding in. The chickens are not on a concrete floor. They're on a dirt floor, but we are required to add bedding to keep them comfortable. We receive the chickens the day they're hatched. We keep them for approximately 48 to 50 days, and grow them to about 7 pounds. Smart Chicken provides a catch crew that comes in and catches them. We have about 14 days to remove the litter from the barn, clean the barn, do whatever is necessary to prepare for the next flock. We run about 5.5 flocks per year. A flock consists of two barns. The feed bins are connected to each barn, so a flock of chickens is two barns. We currently put about 22,500 chickens in each barn. Our day-to-day operations include walking the barn once a day, removing mortalities, looking for water issues, feed issues, ventilation issues, things like that. We also have a representative from Smart Chicken that visits us, depending on the flock age, sometimes once or twice a week. Unless we are having an issue with the flock's health, then they will come. They're available to us 24/7, so if we have any problems, we can contact them day or night. We are required to keep records of what we do and what we are doing. Smart Chicken reviews those. They've got a lot of money invested. I've got a lot of money invested. They want to make sure we're growing a quality product. I want to make sure that I'm growing a quality product or I don't get paid. They check on our animal husbandry. Being an organic grower, we have a company, and they're called Idles from Iowa, Des Moines, Iowa, I think. They do periodic inspections on the barn also to make sure that our air quality is good in the barn, that we're taking care of the chickens, that our range areas are clean, that we're not using chemicals around the barn for weed control. Everything has to be controlled with mechanical stuff to maintain our organic status. So when the employees are done with walking chickens, we're usually working on the yard or maintaining the barns. It's no different than any other structure. They require a certain amount of maintenance. The feed comes from Seneca, Kansas, for my current location. Because it's organic feed, they have contracts with growers for the organic grains. This new site will not qualify for organic because it's on existing cropland, and I'll have to wait 3 years before I can go to the organic status. The ground needs to remain chemical-free for 3 years. Manure management, we take the manure out in between each flock, and then we will add bedding if necessary to get an adequate bedding depth. When the chicks come in, we're heating the barns to about 90 degrees because a chick at 1 day old cannot maintain their own body heat. And the controllers in the barn will take that temperature down, but we need to make sure that we can provide adequate housing for the chicken at that age. So again, our bedding depth needs to stay at a minimum depth. We take the manure out. We have a machine that goes in and processes, takes the manure off the top of the old bedding. It will shake it. I compare it to a potato digger. It will shake the old bedding, leave some of it in the barn. We take the manure out. We stockpile it until we haul it to the fields. I've got people that are buying manure from me. It's a very good product for land. I'll touch on that a little bit later on. It's a great fertilizer, has great analysis. My agronomist, I'll take a sample to him. He sends it off to a lab. They analyze it, tell me what's in it. We apply it on the ground, on the soil, on our farm ground to match and take place of commercial fertilizer. Stockpile, all of my manure management is managed through the DEQ. I think they added a letter to that. It's the DEE something. They're actually visiting my farm right now as we speak to make sure that everything is in compliance. I'm not required to have a permit because the chickens are in a housed environment. I don't have any open lot like a feedlot. I've got a feedlot at my house. I got 300 head of feeder cattle there also. But water can't run through a chicken barn, so they don't require me to my manure management is maybe less or not as extensive as in a feedlot operation. They do ask me to not store manure in a water drain or things like that. The new site I propose to have, the plan is to have a large slab to put all the manure on until it is picked up. Also on that slab, we compost our dead chickens. If you bury them in manure, the varmints do not get to them, and they decompose quite rapidly. We have a lot of wood in our waste, in our manure, and that carbon in there will help an animal or a carcass of any kind decompose. In 5 to 7 days, you don't recognize it as a chicken. It's pretty well. And then that will go back out onto the land, spread with the rest of the manure. So that's how we take care of the deads. Again, the DEQ monitors all the manure activity on the farm, and again, they're visiting me today. The roads, we met with Mark. I'm on the township board in Nemaw. Also, myself and the other board members met with Mark to see what it would take to bring Ash Road up to specs. I'm going to cost share with the township on the rock and the grading that is going to be required to make that accessible for the truck traffic and things like that.
Not to interrupt you, but you have another operation already, and that's within your township also, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
How much additional work have you seen to the roads? I mean, you have a precursor already. This isn't going to be something new. It'll just be an addition or change. Right. What have you seen on additional maintenance to that road?
I don't think we've seen any change. It seems like all the farm roads now have semi-traffic on them. Every farmer, most of them, owns semis. There's a lot more in the fall, of course, at harvest time. But as winter goes on and grain storage is emptied, and things are hauled in, but I cannot say, I don't have any documentation to back what I say, but I don't think we've went through any more material or anything like that on that road. I don't think it's required any more grading than the other roads.
That's always a concern, so I just thought I'd bring it up as you're talking about bringing that other road up to Beck.
The feed trucks typically come off of Highway 41 onto 38th and come north to my facility. I expect that they'll use the same path and then just turn east on Ash Road to access. And like I said, I don't think we have any other maintenance issues on that road or anymore. We do keep it cleaner in the wintertime. My operator also works for me part-time, and so we get snow off to accommodate the feed trucks and everyone else. And I'm not saying I'm favored or anything like that, but we take care of it. Number 10 is a complaint process from the public. If there's any complaints, which I know of none, I'll deal with it as it comes in, take action on it to correct the problem if there is any problem. The well water letter is included. I did search for water on this farm to irrigate at one time. And we could not find enough water to support irrigation. In the corner where I'm proposing to build, we did a test hole, and it would provide 300 gallon a minute, which is in excess of what we need for the chickens. Smart Chicken requires that we have a 15 gallon a minute well on an 8 barn site. My current site has 2 20 gallon a minute pumps. We alternate those pumps so that we know we have water all the time. In the event one goes bad, the chickens will always have water. This is under what the NRD would consider a high-capacity well. They consider a high-capacity well 50 gallon a minute, so I did not have to apply for any special permit to be able to pump more water. It's pretty much a good house well. The handout that I handed out, I'll go over that in a moment, but Dennis Rosine did some math during the planning and zoning meeting, his math showed 12 gallon a minute is what I'd need to sustain 8 barns. So it's kind of like a good house well. That letter's included from Tim Alves. He feels that there's good water there. In summary, a number 12, I currently own and manage, as I've said before, 38th Road Poultry, which is 6 barns. We added 4 years later. At the time I applied for that permit, I got quite a bit of pushback. Eric and I believe Matt Bauman went up to a site by Waverly with me that had 18 barns on their site. They're a mile and a half out of Waverly. Waverly does not have a problem with it. Eric and Matt both found that the smell, the flies, everything else was pretty much non-existent. It's a livestock facility, so you're going to have some of that. At my facility, when we do cleanouts, when we move manure, we do have smell. We do have some flies. As far as the flies existing in the barn, our barns run on a negative static pressure. Flies do not exist in a negative static pressure climate. And we run a negative static pressure that determines how our fans run, how our ventilation opens, things like that. So, again, we do have flies by the manure pile. We do have stink when we're loading manure, when we're cleaning out barns, but it's very minimal. The stockpiled manure outside of the barn, I would compare it to silage. I don't know if you don't know what silage is, I guess you'll have to ask, but when it rains, like it rained last night, it will seal over and it will form a crust like a packed silage pile, and it will shed water. The water coming off the pile is nearly clean. And once you pierce that, then you start having odor and fly issues. But it seals itself, so we leave it sealed up. When we haul it out, we haul it out and get rid of it, and it's gone. Safety, health, and welfare considerations for flock management. Some of that I covered. I have a field tech that comes out, depending on the age of the flock, once a week. She'll do weights. She'll check and make sure that things are adequate in the barn. She'll send me pictures of feeders that are broke, or if I have an air inlet that's out of place, or... She's just kind of another set of eyes in the barn that we really appreciate. She's like a coach, and she tells me what we need to do to achieve a good product. They also help determine ventilation, and they help determine light intensity, things like that. As it says, reading down through number 13, we use about 6,000 gallons of propane in a barn a year. The safety of the bird, the care of the bird, the safety and care of my employees is my top priority. I try to run a clean facility and a safe facility. Since I started in 2018, we have not had an accident. Again, I don't think that we've had any complaints that I'm aware of on the operation of the barn. I've also got included number 14 covers the UNL matrix. Steve Martin from AFAN helped me fill this out. We scored fairly well on it. I think you're all aware. Are you all familiar with it? It's a scoring system for CAFOs. They ask several questions, and how we answer them, we achieve a certain score. You guys know what it... I mean,
I don't know the intro, you know, the exact details on it, but we receive the scoring. Yeah, it's in the packet, and they go through the scoring. It's as flat as it gets for Nebraska.
My score is 102 on it. As Lisa alluded to earlier, some counties, if you score 75 or more, the permit is issued.
Hello.
I do know of other counties that have used it. I personally don't put too much stock in those just because they're such a generic, it can't accommodate for every known thing, but I guess it gives a reference.
Should we wait for Eric to come back?
You can keep going.
Okay. I got a letter from Chief Briggs concerning safety and fire coverage. He's pretty comfortable that they can handle anything that would happen at the chicken houses from the perspective of fire. We haven't had any incidents. We did have one when the fire that got out of control on Highway 41 about 4 years ago this fall and came through my chicken barns. It lit my manure pile on fire. We was unable to contain it. They was unable to. We just let it smolder. Jerry Verbka was the fire chief at that time. He said, if you need anything, call me. Otherwise, just let it smolder. It finally smoldered its way out. Every time we'd go into it with a payloader to attempt to put fire on it, like, or water on it, like I said, it kind of coats itself over. That would open it up to oxygen, and it would just flare up. So we just let it go and kept an eye on it. In closing, my first site was started to provide a revenue stream for a young person wanting to come back to the farm. It's very hard to get started in farming. There wasn't enough acres that I farmed for him to get started. We looked into chicken growing, and it's worked out well. Our chickens are shipped coast to coast in the United States. We're fresh, never frozen. It's kind of nice to walk through a grocery store and see the Smart Chicken label and say, that might have come from my chicken operation. I got a lot of pushback during my first go-round. Some of their concerns was valid. I think some of it was they had no backing to base their complaint on. I've been in agriculture since I was 12. I live on the homestead. My great-grandfather homesteaded. I've got roots in Gage County. I've been offered parcels of ground in other counties, but I don't want to go to other counties. I want to stay here. I want to stay close to home. The taxes on my current six barns, as you can see, on property tax alone is $17,760 a year. I would think that CAFOs would be a little bit more accepted on that fact alone. I think the school system probably likes the money coming in, the fire district, the NRD, all the people that benefit from my tax dollars. On top of the property taxes, I got to pay personal property tax on the equipment in the barn. Thank you for your time and your service on the board. The water usage handout that I handed out to you, as you can read, it seemed that during the planning and zoning meeting, there was a lot of concern about water usage. I did some calculations with the help of my agronomist and some other people. One barn, the total water intake over the 47 days, and we track that water every day. We know how much them chickens drank because it determines the health of the chicken. If we see our water consumption drop off, we know that there's something going on. It was almost 62,000 gallons a minute. In comparison to my pivots that pump 800 gallon, it was 62,000 for the term of the flock, not... In comparison to my 800-gallon-minute wells, it's for a pivot that you see when you're driving down the road, it's one of them running 77 minutes to do the math on that. As I said earlier, Dennis Rosine did the math during the planning and zoning meeting, and he said, I require a 12-gallon-a-minute well. The pushback on water usage, I think there's others that use more water. I'm growing feed. I'm growing a food product to feed the world and the nation, and I've got attached to the handout I know some people at the City of Lincoln, they have meters on their pumps or on their golf courses. One golf course uses 442,000 gallons of water a day to water the golf course. That's one. There's 10 golf courses in Lincoln. And another thing that I did a little math on while between meetings, by using my manure like I do, I offset and do not use as much commercial fertilizer. With the help of my agronomist, we did a little math on some 1152O and what he recommends that I put on in comparison to commercial fertilizer, and I save about 750,000 gallons of water that it would take to produce the commercial fertilizer. In the planning and zoning meetings, there was some information given from someone that I had high-capacity wells out there. I don't have high-capacity wells. They're not required. The NRD, as I said earlier, I would have to go get a permit. They're not issuing permits right now. I checked with them yesterday. I think their concerns are legitimate, but I think they're picking on the wrong industry. We need to eat. Everybody eats. We don't all have to play golf or football or soccer or whatever else we're using our water on. Shortly after the planning and zoning meeting, my father-in-law lives in West Beatrice, and I drove into town. We go to, on Dorsey Street and go east, and people were starting to water their lawns. Three blocks in a row, there was water running down the gutter. It's like, if you want to regulate somebody, I think maybe you should be, they should be picking on a different industry rather than agriculture. Back in the day, we wasted water also, but again, I have an agronomist who checks my crops, particularly my irrigated crops, once a week. He pulls soil samples and determines my water availability, and he schedules my water. It's a precious resource that we got to take care of. I wanted to also address Kim's note. She lives, it'd be over a mile as the crow, well, about a mile as the crow flies away from me, to the east and south. And I'm not sure what she's smelling, but from there's going to be days when it's my farm, but I don't know how she's smelling to the degree that she describes my farm. She used to work for me. Once in a while, the catch crew would leave chickens. We'd catch the chickens and go out by the manure pile and butcher them, and that wasn't a problem. I give her some free manure one time because she was having trouble getting hay for her horses. That wasn't a problem. It was spread right next to her house. She didn't have an issue with that, but for some reason, she has an issue now. And to address her concern about property valuation, the closest farm ground to my current chicken facility sold last fall for $9,062.66 per acre. So I don't think we're depreciating farm ground too much. The closest acreage to me is a half a mile. That tract sold in 2018 for $425,000. They had no improvements built. They didn't build a new machine shed. They didn't do anything to it. It sold in 2025 for $715,000. And again, that's the closest one to me. So I don't see where we're devaluating area property. The one south of Kim, a short quarter of a mile, it sold in 2020 for $445,000. It sold again in 2025 for $652,000. So, and they've got about 100 chickens on their place that are free-range egg layers. So, again, I don't think that I'm harming the value of the land. There was another tract that sold a few miles away that actually brought less, $7,475 an acre. Just as a comparison sale, that was sold in January. So, again, the ones that are close to the chicken barns are selling
for more than the ones that are 5 miles away. So I don't know. I think that's all I have. If you have any questions.
Roy, nothing to do with the permit, but I'm curious, what is the analysis of the chicken manure?
My agronomist is here.
Well, I'm just curious. I always understood it was high in nitrogen.
It's not. It's pretty high in phosphate for the most part.
Is it?
It's got a slow release nitrogen. It's like 50 pounds per year over a 2-year period. I apply 3 tons to the acre every other year.
Okay.
And the phosphate for hay ground, for soybeans, it's great. Yep. And I think Brett will probably speak here a little later, and he will maybe able to take
it. It's nothing to do with spread. I'm just curious about
it. It's also got trace nutrients in it that make it very valuable.
Do you sell yours differently because it's organic versus the heart? I was just looking through your paperwork here, you know, just by putting that fertilizer down instead of liquid, you're showing the huge water savings there over. And a lot of people are going to liquid fertilizer now for safety or other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The big water savings you have using that. I didn't know if that organic status makes any difference on your ground or.
No, it does not. I haven't been able to reach an organic market. I took a load of my manure to Kentucky because there was a guy down there that was pelletizing manure, and the guys that grow organic crops liked pelletized manure because they could put that in furrow with their corn, and it was like a starter fertilizer, but again, it was organic. But I had so many wood chips in mine, we couldn't get it to process or to pelletize. He burned up 3 machines trying to grind the wood that's in my manure to the point where they could pelletize it, and it didn't work out.
So these are the same barns as what you have currently up by Cortland.
Right.
Same process where you talked about the bedding, the way that's stirred. Mr. Bauman and I did go up and look at barns in Waverly. I actually went and looked at 6 barns over in Pawnee, too. Prior to going up there, my thought was it was going to be the smell like you had with the layers, if you guys have ever been in laying houses, where it's that really pungent ammonia smell. That's what I expected. It's chickens. That's what chickens smell like. Wasn't the case at all. What I saw there was it smelled more like a feed sack or something when I was standing right in the fans. And Mr. Bauman is probably around agriculture less than myself, and he thought the same thing. I don't know how to say that differently, but he didn't notice the smell like we anticipated. These buildings are different than the Pawnee buildings or the ones that we went and looked at that time. They're the more modern design. If this process is the same, I would anticipate it being the same as those buildings. Your buildings are identical to what I saw up there. They've been kept up well from what I've seen. Lisa, have we had complaints? I mean, you can't really go off anything now as there's a new project. People start worrying again, but on the buildings over the years now, these buildings are 3 years old?
2018 I started growing.
Oh, shoot, they're a lot older than that. So over the past multiple years here, what kind of complaints have you got at P&Z on these buildings?
I have had no complaints come in to the Planning and Zoning office, and at our P&Z hearing, none of the members spoke about any opposition through their terms at that time. So, if one of the conditions from when the last SUP came through when Roy first started, I think it was John Hill that placed the condition to put the manure on a pad, of which you complied with. That was a condition that was placed by Board of Supervisors, and you have included that pad in your plan for the manure pile itself. So that's one.
Has your office, the attorney's office, received complaints on these buildings, the current buildings by Cortland?
None that I'm aware of.
Because, I mean, this was a hot topic. When these came out, there was a lot of opposition around these buildings. We did a lot of driving looking around because was nervous about myself. You know, are we going to have these ammonia factories pushing the smell out all over? And every time there's a livestock facility, that's what people worry about. It's generally smell, and then we stack the other things around it. But, I mean, that's we have some history with these two, Mr. Jurgens.
Last time Roy was in front of us, Myron Dorn was sitting in your seat.
You're right. I forgot about that.
My neighbor to the east that owns the 80 to the east lives in Kansas, I believe, and she was adamantly opposed, and I think she's called Lisa on what I'm doing on this one here because she's not here. She recently rented her farm to a new tenant, and I'm working on my farm, and they start hauling chicken manure in there from the other chicken facility that's east of Firth. That manure has a different smell. It's more concentrated. So some of the pushback that I received in the last few weeks, they was spreading that manure on a day when the wind was blowing out of the south, probably harder than I would have been spreading manure on that day. But I think they was anticipating rain. They wanted to get it on the field. But all of my neighbors smelled someone else's manure. It wasn't mine. And I think Emily has tried to introduce some guidelines for spreading manure, and I'd like to speak with her about that at some point because I've got some ideas. But some of what you may or may not hear today is from that event. So the person that was adamantly opposed to my chicken barns was having chicken manure spread on her farm. But again, she's in Kansas, so she doesn't know. And it's up to the operator. I mean, it's our choice if we want to drive too fast. It's our choice if we want to drive recklessly. It's our choice. And I don't want to try to put too many burdens on other operators, but common sense has got to play into some of the things that we do. And I didn't agree with what they did. It was the same day. I think Lisa put the signs in my farm, and my phone kind of blew up.
Good timing there.
Yep.
Well, we've got cattle producers on the board that spread manure too. I mean, it's good for the ground. It's just, it's not pleasant at times. Another question that always comes up, there's always a fear that it's absentee owners. You've kind of talked about that with one of your neighbors there that leases the farm out. That's their prerogative. That's their choice to rent ground out. You said these are buildings that you are going to operate or continue to operate?
Correct, yep. Smart Chicken, I guess they like the way I do things. They've approached me. They're also looking for other growers to expand, but they asked me if I would be interested in expansion and management. So that's what I'm doing.
Mr. Dorn.
Isn't 7 pounds awful big for a chicken? Well, my mom used to raise broilers, and a 6 pound was pretty good size.
That's what the market is demanding. That's what Smart Chicken asks us to bring them up to. They determine the feed ration we're on. We go through 4 different rations of feed. The light intensity in the barn will stimulate growth in the chicken or will slow it down. And we try to, through those things, we try to achieve a 6 3/4 to 7 pound chicken. Yes, it's a big chicken. It's not as big as some, but it's a big chicken.
There were also considerations made to feed not only for growing but for odor as well that we talked about. Was that part of your process on the past buildings or this building, or that's outside of anything that you guys deal with?
That's out of anything I deal with. I don't remember that. Another
that may have been on a hog barn. I remember there were different things or combinations of feed that they looked at for output odor on the backside of Eaton, and I didn't know if that was something that went into this or not.
Another thing coming down through Smart Chicken is, I think in 2028, to be an organic grower, the organic people have changed the population density in the barn. So to have the square footage I have in my barns, they're going to lessen the population to, I believe, 17,000 chickens instead of the 22,000 400, 500, whatever that I get now. So we're going to be growing less chickens in the same square footage because of the organics. And we've got to do that. We've got to follow their standards to be able to market as an organic chicken. So we're going to have less chickens overall.
So what do you do to make sure you're organic?
We can't use chemicals around the building. Everything around my current 10 barns is string trimmed, mechanically treated. We can't have any chemicals anywhere close to the barns. During a certain parameters of temperature and age of the chicken, we have to open doors to allow the chicken to go out into a range area. And out of the 22,200 chickens, we might have five out there. On a nice morning with some bugs in the grass, there might be 20 out there, but they kind of like stay in where it's warm or cool, or they know their feed and water's inside. They're not gonna go charging outside. We got to feed the organic feed, which is again out of my hands. It is ordered. I tell the company that my bins are empty or whatever. They order from Valley View Milling in Seneca, Kansas currently. Again, these eight will not be organic because I've got to wait the three-year period. June will be the first year because I post-sprayed crops that was on the ground. I haven't done anything with the ground since except let it lay. So,
additional questions for Mr. Mulder?
I would invite any of you or all of you to come if we've got biosecurity things. I sent Dawn an invitation to share with you guys prior to this meeting. If you want to come out and see us, the door's open anytime.
All right, with that.
I have a question.
All right.
At the beginning of this, and I'd read it in the paper and I tried to look a little bit, and it might be a question for Amanda and Lisa. When you have an applicant, on a deal like this, and you have two owners, don't they both have to be listed?
So, as far as the two owners, no, they don't. They went under Ash Road. But the NDEE verifies through their process, or NWEE verifies through their process in the inspection side of things, who those owners are specifically.
I just tried to do a little bit of looking where these sat, and I did some searching, and there was a Roger Olson listed on these, so I wasn't sure if that was going to be continued. I just don't like I don't like the lack of transparency on that, but I guess if it's not required. And then I was doing just a little bit of looking on your numbers with the taxes. It definitely, as you said, schools definitely profit more on that. Not profit, that's not the wrong word, but capitalize maybe. Because schools are 60 to 70% of the property tax value. Of that, about 4,800 is would be county's portion of that. And as Eric said, or kind of alluded to with like costs, I did do just out of curiosity, because the majority cost of the county on that kind of facility would be to maintain roads. I know those might be township, but still it's the cost of the material. This is just more informational because I didn't share it with our board yet, but I figured you'd have on an average, every 5 years, you put about 6 loads of gravel on a road, and say with the additional traffic, you put an extra 2 loads of gravel over that 5 years. That additional cost would be split out over 5 years, so that'd be $268 annually. And then the hauling, you'd have to account for that. Again, the 2 extra trips over 5 years, so $132 a year for hauling. And then it just came down to grading. I assumed grader runs twice a month on average, maybe have to add an additional one time a month. I use the numbers from how I fill out grants, just the number that we get per hour, an hour per road, an extra 1 hour of grading per month for an additional traffic on road would be about $2,280, and that's just per mile per year. So a total of $2,680 per mile per year in additional costs for when you have a significant amount of traffic year-round, and that's just the feed trucks coming in and out. So at least with yours, you're like 2 miles off of the highway, so that, I mean, at least covers the cost. I do see some that are a lot farther away, that where it ends up costing the county to have those facilities there. But just more information, I ran the numbers because I was curious, because while your tax bill is high, and I saw it in your thing, it typically, I mean, a very small portion of that goes to the counties.
But you haven't seen additional, you haven't put additional gravel on since 18?
No, and I'm on the township board, and I have been since 2005 because I can't get anybody else to take my position. So we haven't seen any additional maintenance or material required.
Because that's always a concern.
It's traveled by UPS, it's traveled by FedEx, it's traveled by Prime, it's traveled by the buses. We have a special needs student. The bus goes by 4 times a day. So it's a very high-traveled road. With excluding my chickens.
That was part of the discussion with your last permits. I remember as the roads were going to be destroyed because of the feed trucks. We have experienced time now where we can look back on what did your barns cause, where at that time we were just speculating. So now you can say since 18, so 8 years, you have not had any additional material. How much more often, or how often do you make the blade run by now compared to what you did before?
I don't ask him to run any additional trips, and he doesn't. He runs, our blade runs about 10 hours a week within the township, and he's pretty well self-directed. He goes wherever he feels is necessary, and he also does the material needs. And I would not say the 38th Road is on the top of the list every time he turns in a spring or fall request.
Mark, just give me a nod or a shake, and I'll say what you said on the record. But with these livestock facilities, have you seen additional material needed for them? Mr. Kunke is shaking his head no. It was just out of curiosity there. Any additional questions for Mr. Mulder before we start having the public come up and talk? There is a sign-up sheet on the table, too, if you haven't already signed up. To my right by Ms. Wiegand, if anyone else would like to get up and speak at the public hearing.
It's not a question or comment. You talked about the manure spreading. I'd love to have a conversation. That actually manure portion of it was part of a draft. I had instructed to pull community input into a draft. So as you referred to it as my idea, it was not my idea per se, and actually that portion of it was pulled out before the draft was even sent to planning and zoning. So I would love to have an actual conversation to walk through that if you have some ideas.
Okay.
Because Ms. Axby has talked about just good, basically you had talked about good neighbor agreements in the past.
Be a good neighbor. I mean, that's the thing, and I want to make that clear too. I mean, I have livestock. I run cattle. And I just really, really, and I haven't, you have ran yours very well. But when people come in and aren't good neighbors, that makes a very bad look on ag, and I do not like that as an ag producer myself. And so I just want to make sure that whatever regulations that we have, make sure that companies or whoever comes in is respectful.
And that's the same thing I alluded to, common sense.
Not everybody has that. So
it plays a huge role in any decision you make,
yeah.
Whether it's manure spreading or driving your automobile or whatever.
So. As we have more folks moving from town out into the country, though, I mean, I've got around me a housing development has grown over the last decade. And when my neighbor spreads manure, isn't there something we can do? It's like, close your window. I mean, I hate to say it. I've got great neighbors. They manage their manure well, I think. It's closer to me than it is to the other neighbors. They're great neighbors, but they've now moved into an environment where there is manure, fertilizer, anhydrous. It's a different environment. Some folks aren't used to that. It's just the way it is. But like Ms. Axby has said, we had discussions about spread manure by schools and stuff even, and people aren't always used to that. And there are probably better times and different situations. It's hard to have a one-size-fits-all when there are different situations depending on your condition.
Like he said, common sense and being respectful. So if you're going to apply, let's say, next to a school, let's not do it on the surface the night of a home football game. Let's.
I have a guy that I went out to a house here. It would have been this fall, and there's a neighbor that has a pipe. The fellow on the south side of the road, he intentionally spreads multiple times a year when there's a good south wind or a good north wind, so that it all blows towards him. Instead of putting it all down at one time, too, he does it in steps so that he can hit him multiple times. He's within his rights. He's just doing it to try to spite that neighbor.
I custom spread some for a guy outside of Beatrice, and I was between two houses, and it was Christmas, before Christmas. We stockpiled it away from the homes, and the landowner was like, what are you doing piling it way over here? And it's like, it's my name on the line here, so we're going to stay away from them. And then we had beautiful weather to spread, but I didn't go down and spread until after Christmas. In the event that they had a Christmas thing or something, I didn't want to be the bad guy. So that's where common sense plays in. My concern about putting regulations on it is what's going to be next. Are you going to have to shut the combine off at 10 o'clock because everybody in the development's trying to go to bed and their kids got school the next day?
Sir, believe me, that gets brought up, shutting down farm equipment at a certain time.
Or the dust that we make, or, you know, anything. So if there's no more questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. What we'll do is we'll go through anyone that would like to speak, and then probably have Mr. Mulder come back if we have any questions for him after.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll just start at the top of the list that I have. There is another sign-up sheet over here if anyone else would like to sign up. If you have checked that you'd like to speak, I'll call your name, and then we'll see after that. Up first, Dan Mulder.
Swear in.
Yes, please give your name and address for the record.
My name is Diane Mulder. My address is 5773 East Apple Road, Firth, Nebraska, and I am a resident of Gage County.
Would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
I'll have Ms. Hill start a timer here. We'll give each person 3 minutes to
go through what they have. You guys listen fast.
And then if there's additional comment or questions from the board, we'll go from there. But let's go ahead and start.
There's a lot of talk about preservation of natural resources like land and water, and I want to talk about one today that's equally as important. Years ago, I watched the movie The Monuments Men about a group of World War II Allied soldiers trying to recover stolen art from the Nazis, the key idea being if you destroy a people's culture, you'll make it easier to erase them entirely. The movie is about fine art and church bells, but one can make an argument there's a natural resource in Gage County that is equally as important. It's something quieter, but just as powerful. It's culture, not built through museums, but through land, labor, and continuity across generations. In a farming community, culture isn't abstract. It's lived daily. Over the past 175 years, certain values have taken root. Stewardship of the land, self-reliance paired with mutual dependence, respect for work and time, tradition and continuity, practical knowledge with tangible skills that value experience, common sense, and proven methods. Sometimes it takes moving away from here to fully appreciate how valuable this is. When I moved away, I was surrounded by people in the big city, but I was mostly alone. I had what I needed, but I felt connection to nothing. I was often busy, but I wasn't sure what it was really all for. And then I'd come back home. I'd experience people gathering together for a meal and a cold beer after a long day's work in the fields. Neighbors showing up to help without being asked. I'd sit at tables where people knew my name, my family, and my stories. I would stand on land where I could say, my grandparents worked this. My parents built this. This is a part of me. These things don't exist on their own. They're foundationally built over generations through our way of life based on agriculture. Which brings us to the decision in front of you, because this isn't just about a livestock operation. It's about whether we continue to be a place where this kind of life is still real. I understand concerns are raised, and no one is dismissing the fact that agriculture comes with trade-offs. But we have to ask ourselves, if we gradually remove the working parts of the community, how long before we have something that looks nice on the surface but empty underneath? The proposal before you represents someone choosing to invest here, to work here, and to carry forward the kind of life that built this county. A farmer who has lived his whole life in Gage County, who lives on his family's homestead, who learned from his family members who were also farmers, who learned it from their family members who were farmers. Roy is here today because he wants to build a business raising livestock, but it's deeper than that. The addition of his new business supports the very cultural values that make our lives something special, a natural resource of priceless value not found in big cities. This is not something we should push away. It is something we should protect, because in the end, the question is, are we willing to continue being the community that made this all possible? Thank you.
Well then.
4 seconds.
How much?
24.
I skipped a paragraph. I could have read it.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Red Bear. Do you give your name and address for the record, and I'll swear you in?
Tad Bear, 4211 East Apple Road, Cortland, Nebraska.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God?
I do.
Are you ready, Ms. Hill? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just, I don't care what it smells like in Waverly. According to Mr. Mulder, that's not a half a mile south of his operation today. Our pond is being diverted. The water that runs, Lyle Hartwig has lived on that property since 1992. And water, there's a spring that runs to that pond. That pond, the water is being diverted, and it's going to that operation. Our pond is drying up. What's that doing to our property value? Okay, I know his property value is increasing. What's it doing to our property value? And I'm glad that he's proud of all the taxes that he's paying. But my taxes keep going up, too, and my property value is going down. So I don't know how the board can sit here in good conscience and sit here and think, well, that's okay, especially when the first go-around, we had 80% of the people sign a petition against this, and it passed anyway, because it wasn't filed correctly. That's a crock. He lives not more than 2.5 miles away from his operation, and he's got to go and put it somewhere where there's other people that aren't in farming and, you know, just have acreages, and we have to deal with all the smell and now the water issue. So I just am opposed against this. I don't see how we can, in good nature, just sit here and, you know, I guess when you're handed every, my dad grew up on a farm too. He raised a family through the 80s, okay? He had a dairy cattle operation and a hog operation. One thing he would have never done is move it 2.5 miles away so he didn't have to deal with the smell and the flies and everything else, like Mr. Mulder's done. So he survived through the 80s. I know about needing additional revenue streams when you're farming, but it's, you know, I guess it's about if you're handed everything to you on a silver platter and you don't care about anybody else but yourself, I guess that's what you go ahead and do. That's all I've got to say.
Any questions for Mr. Bear? Mr. Bear, have you had any well issues at your house?
I sent you all an email. I think you hopefully received that.
I'm going to have to look back. I will look back.
Yeah, there's some information from the NRD that I included in that email as well.
And I had a question. Did you say your property value went down?
No, it increased last year, but based on what he's saying about what the houses are selling for in the area, they're not directly south of his operation. So it's like comparing bull crap to chicken crap.
Any other questions for Mr. Bear? Thank you, sir. Let's see. Okay, this one didn't want to speak. Up next, Jennifer Olberg. Name and address for the record, please.
Jennifer Olberg, 3987 East Apple Road. It's Cortland.
Do you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God?
I do. I don't have a lot to say. I was just asked to come up here. The majority of the neighbors within the mile and a half are totally against this. Back when he was approved for the last time, he got approved for his 10 barns, you know, we were told that he was at his max. However, there must be some kind of a loophole or whatever that if you turn it into another LLC, another corporation, you can keep adding. The neighbors are very concerned about this because his private investor, who Emily mentioned earlier, he's a very, very wealthy man, so money is not going to be an issue to keep doing this over and over again. That is a big concern of the neighbors, is like, when he's done with these 8, are they going to do another 8? We are in such a highly populated area that this, we just feel like this amount of barns, 18 barns, and who knows how many more in the future, it's just the amount of houses that we have. I believe there's 21 houses within a square mile or 1.5 miles. We have a lot of people there. So we just don't feel like it's in the right area to keep adding and keep adding. We're worried that that's what's going to happen. Also, we're really worried. Last time when those buildings were being constructed, there were some really toxic fumes that we were dealing with. We were coughing. We were getting headaches. And it was always on days that it was foggy out or it was raining. We called. Then finally decided, neighbors, where we were all talking about, like, where is these toxic fumes coming from? Call the Portland Fire Department. They go out there and realize that he had a pit. He dug a pit, and he was burning all his plastic stuff from his insulation from his barns. He was warned not to do that, and I assume he agreed he wasn't going to do it, but it kept going on. So then they went ahead, the Portland Fire Department went ahead and called the state. The state did go out there, so there should be documentation of this. They went out there and took all kinds of pictures of all this plastic stuff in this pit that was making everybody sick, and he had to haul it out of there and dispose of it properly and show proof that he disposed of it. And he had, I don't know how many days to do this. So there, that was like, we were very concerned. We don't want that to happen again. And that kind of shows what kind of a neighbor, you know, it's not being nice to your neighbors to burn that kind of toxic stuff. The other thing, too, I do have to say is the last time around, he talked about, and I believe it was Myron Dorn that said that one of the conditions was for him to, he wanted to put like a berm with trees. I don't know if you guys remember that or not. That was to help buffer the smell and stuff. And that, then at the planning and zoning meeting a couple weeks ago, he said something like, no, I'm not going to do that. Or, that was not a thing. But that was one of the conditions, as far as we all knew, that he was supposed to put a barrier up just to help with the smell and such. And not to mention the noise. I mean, when the fans are going, literally, I didn't know what it was for a while. We'd be outside, I'm like, we're StarCare. I mean, it's a constant. When those fans are going, it's like, woo, woo. It's like a helicopter is over my house. It's just how it does. It just travels like that. So right, I mean,
please wrap up, Ms. Holbrook.
Okay, sorry. That's all I have. I turned in the petition. Like I said, most of the neighbors are against this. They do complain about the smell, but people just don't know who to call it to complain about. They're tired of it.
We do have a petition here if anyone would like to see it.
I have a copy here, too, if somebody wants another copy.
We have the original and a copy of the clerk's, and this has also been given to the attorney's office, too. Any questions for Ms. Holbrook? Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. Eric?
I'm sorry.
No, just a quick comment before the next person comes up. I'm going to have to run home. So I have an appointment at home, and now my husband can't do it because he hurt himself, and he can't do it. So I'm going to have to leave. So I'll listen to this, and I'd like to get all the notes later.
Sounds good.
Okay.
And no action will be taken today anyway.
And then he brought up a point that I was wondering if you have a tree plan, and you can answer that in an email to me later. A tree plan?
I wrote that down. I'll ask him that when he comes back
thank
up.
Thank you.
Next up, Jeff Oberg. Name and address, please, for the record.
Jeff Oberg, 3987 East Apple Road.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
We have air quality problems in our area from this chicken farm that's presently there. I went around the other night, spoke with our neighbors. Everybody had the same complaint, the smell from the place. It's not all the time. You may go out, and you may not smell anything. I don't know if it's when he's cleaning out barns, moving manure. It's very frequent. It all depends on which direction the wind's blowing. But it seems that everybody is complaining about their quality. We don't leave our windows open anymore when we leave the house. The only time we'll have them open is when we're home, because you don't know what you're going to come home to. I don't understand. I guess years ago when he applied for this permit, for the first chicken barn. He was told he could have 10 buildings. So that was his max AU. My understanding is now he's coming in under an LLC as a different entity and trying to build 8 more barns, which is 80% more AU than what he was allowed in the beginning. I don't think you should be able to divide your land up, start up LLCs, and just start doubling the size or adding 80%. Or where is this going to go? Does it stop here, or is there going to be another LLC that pops in? The neighbors are so opposed against this. The only one good thing that any neighbor had to say about this was 38th Road has never had more rock on it than it has now. You travel down that road now, there's plenty of rock. It seems that there's always rock being put down on that road. So I'm sure the majority of the taxes that he is paying are going to that road, and it's not just the 2 miles. That road is rocked from Highway 41 to Apple Road. Trucks are going both ways. The majority of them are going south, which is further. But I think the majority of that is probably going to those roads. That's all I got.
I will I'll address the 8 barn versus 10 barn with, well, actually, Lisa, I'll just address it right now.
Sure.
8 barn versus 10 barn. I've heard that a couple times now. The 10 barns, and I'm asking, not stating, the 10 barns was approved for the site where he has the current operation. The 8 barns is for the new site. Doesn't matter if it's LLC, his name. I mean, that makes zero difference whatsoever.
It was a separate partial that he owned. He also had subdivided off out of that 80 acres a 20-acre partial. The NWEE requirements are it has to have a separate water well source, standalone operations of manure management, and the ownership has to be separate than what the other 2 barns are, you know, or the 2 sites are, and that's what they would consider in their permitting process as well.
So ownership, and this is me asking, ownership means nothing whatsoever. It's just strictly those are standalone facilities,
ownership
basically.
It does make a difference.
It does.
If the, well, so this was a separate partial, an 80.
I'm sorry, as far as being a different LLC or something, though, for permitting, ownership doesn't matter. They're looking at the parcels and the standalone units.
They do. The NWEE does look at partial ownership to make sure that they are not the same ownership through their inspection process. So, and they did that review with this particular application as well. But this was always considered to be a standalone operation because it was based on a separate 80. That partial had been identified, I don't know what year, and then he subdivided off within that 80, 20 acres that you have in your packet, and that was identified to the ownership of the Ash Poultry or Ash Road Poultry site.
But they can't just change the name and add more buildings to a site that was
they
approved for 10.
They still have to make the setback requirements, the half a mile setback requirement, regardless. So if you were looking at this particular partial, I think you could do an easy comparison with that map that Chris prepared. You know, if another set of 8 barns would come up or an additional growth, you know, if he steps up to that next classification, yeah, that's 3/4 of a mile, so there's nowhere in this that he can make the setback unless he has a waiver process.
Okay, I was looking at that map this morning. The and Mr. Oberg, to address the rock and gravel, I don't have visual proof one way or another going off of what Mr. Mulder said and what our highway superintendent said. There hasn't been additional material there. As far as we have for information, that's what we're given this morning so far.
Yeah, I understand. I'm quoting that from somebody who lives on 38th Road and had for many, many years. It's changed quite a bit. So these 2 facilities are going to be 1/4 mile apart from each other. I don't see how that works out with the AU requirements that were set forth. I mean, why is there regulations to begin with if it's easy enough to divide your land off and start a new LLC? Who's to say we can't do it again and again and again?
I believe because of the setbacks. Lisa, can you touch on that? Because that is a concern here amongst everybody. Mm-hmm. Can this be done? So say these are a quarter mile apart. Can there be another one put? Can another facility go in right there?
On the same location?
On the same ground, just split off another piece right there.
It would have to be a standalone operation with its own well system as well. And they'd have to still make the half a mile setbacks or whatever that size, you know, size is that they're concurring with. Right now, they're going to be maxed out in locations, though, you know, to make 3/4 of a mile based upon the dwellings. The industry standard, I believe, for smart chicken is close to 1/4 of a mile they require from an existing to, you know, a new facility.
And you would rather they spread these out further or spread them out and not have them together, have them spread in different places?
I think what we have is enough. I think that he fulfilled the max AU on this last facility, and the neighbors are saying it's enough. We don't need any more. Everybody I talked to said it's enough.
Any other questions for Mr. Oberg?
If I can say one more thing. We turned in a petition. According to your regulations, if 20% of the landowners sign this petition, it needs to go to a supermajority vote.
I guess I'll ask counsel on that one.
You're right about the rule that if there is 20% of the adjacent landowners on the petition, then it would have to be a supermajority vote.
And we have the petition. We haven't verified who, where, what yet, but that will be done. But we do have that.
Okay. I ask you to all vote no on this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Keyes. Would you please give your name and address for the record, ma'am?
Deb Keyes, 590 Northview Lane, Beatrice.
Would you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Please begin.
Okay. I am co-owner with my sister of the property at 4283 East Apple Road. That farm ground has been in my family for over 100 years. My parents built a home there 33 years ago, adjacent to Mr. Bear's property there when he was talking about the pond. The water level is so low, it's going to be not, it seems non-existent compared to when my parents lived there. So water supply is a huge concern for us, our family, you know. Property valuations, I know Mr. Mulder mentioned, you know, how they have increased over the years. But that's before another 8 barns are set up there, you know. If anybody wants to sell their property in that area going forward, to me, another, you know, 18 barns up there would be a deterrent of that. I understand odor is a concern. I know I've noticed the odor when I've gone up there to visit. There's times you can't sit outside, but I grew up on a farm, so I understand there's going to be odors. You know, we had cows, chickens, pigs, and all that, but it seems to be an overwhelming persist. And I guess the number of chickens there, you know, unless I was reading the Gage County zoning wrong, I guess that half mile that you're saying, he has more, isn't a chicken a unit?
0.01.
Okay,
yeah,
so then
so
that's.
Each one would be 22,500, and then take that times the 0.01, so it'll be 225 AUs.
Okay,
right
that
now.
Explains that then.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I'm totally against this. I think the 10 barns there, you know, he started out with 4, he added the extra 6. I think that should be enough, and. I understand the neighbors, you know, not wanting that addition around there, so I'm against it, and I hope you vote no.
Would you be okay with building somewhere else?
I think if it's away from a residential area, you know, I understand, you know, there's more homes there, but I think there's other areas. Yes, I'm totally for. We need the food supply.
Just you know? Not by just not. I guess where I'm going is we want them, but just not by us ever. That's the tough thing. Mr.
I just wanted to address to 2 people now have said water level. water level in a pond has got nothing to do with groundwater level.
Right.
That's because we've been in a drought. I live southwest Odell, and the ponds down there are the driest I've seen them for 30 years, maybe. I don't know.
No, and I understand that, okay. too. I agree right. with that. But to me, if the water levels are lower, you know, adding 10, 8 more barns to that, if there wasn't enough for irrigation, you know, that and... You talked about regulating water someday could happen. You know, you're not going to regulate water for a chicken barn because they need water. So you could stop irrigation. You could stop watering golf courses, you know.
Irrigation is always the killer on the aquifer. No one wants to say it, but that's where the problem is irrigation.
Right. And, you know, there are regulations, and there are certain times to run your irrigation wells. Well, there's a constant need for the chicken barns. You know, you can't stop providing water. Otherwise, you're not going to have them grow.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Other questions for Ms. Keyes? Thank you.
For your time.
I only have one other person that wants to speak unless someone else signs up here. Mr. Bernheide, if you'd come up, you are our last, as of right now, you're our last speaker. If you'd give your name and address for the record, and then I will swear you in.
Brett Bernheide, 9885, Wolf Lane, Firth, Nebraska.
Would you please raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes.
Please begin.
All I have is just basic numbers, using numbers I've collected from Roy on this water use thing, because everybody here knows I was in here a couple weeks ago, worried about water use, and we've had our well at our house go dramatically dry in the 25 years we've lived there, right? Not dry, but from 20 gallon to 8 gallon a minute. So, referring back to the water use and using the numbers I got from Roy on the golf course use, which, you know, kind of the, I don't know, silent killer of water, maybe, that's not a fact. Roy said that two barns is one flock. It's referencing his numbers, okay? 62,000 gallon of water per flock. They do 5.5 flocks a year per two barns. Right, multiply all this out, and essentially, if he adds, he's adding four more flocks, right? He has five now because he has 10 barns. He's adding four more flocks with the 8. Should that get approved, the water used on a golf course in Lincoln will run all those chicken barns for 17 years, like 1 year's worth of water on the golf course. I mean, and that's all numbers based on what we've collected, right? Actual use numbers. That's mind-blowing to me. I mean, I don't get it. Like, and then if we run, so we always reference in pivots, right? And I do a lot of irrigation scheduling for guys. I'm an agronomist. It's pretty common knowledge. Very conscious of water use always, and that's why we always probe in the ground and test it and making sure we know our crop water use. 1 year of water use on 9 flocks of birds is 1/2 inch of water in a pivot. Like, it's nothing. A bad year on a pivot in this part of the country is 7 circles. Usually we're 4 to 5 circles of water. Even at that rate, 1 year of golf course water runs 3 pivots at 7 circles. So just tying all that together. You asked about manure usage. I got to look at my phone, sorry for this. To put 3 ton of chicken manure on a quarter section of ground, it replaces, let's see here. 17 ton of anhydrous ammonia. It replaces 30 ton of 1152O. My timer's up. 28 ton of potash and 14 ton of sulfur. That's what the chicken manure eliminates from dry fertilizer. Just on 1/4. And I don't recall for sure, but I think we're covering like 8 to 10 quarters a year. You have to ask Roy to verify those numbers. So that's immense.
That comes down to sustainable farming, as we've talked about, too. I mean, manure management, how you fertilize,
water savings by not putting down liquid fertilizer. I mean, there's a lot of this that comes into it. I guess what I hear, and I don't have anyone else that signed up that wants to speak, people don't want it by them. They're worried about smell, worried about roads, worried about water. I mean, that's the summation of what I've heard. The other side, they want to increase value-added ag there to their business, sustainability, better use of what they have, you know, for their ground, fertilizer for their ground, and additional revenue streams.
Yeah.
I guess that's a really, really brief overview of what we've heard. Any additional questions for Mr. Bernheide?
I had one comment. We do have all Tecolsti's laying hens a mile north of us where we live. Never an issue with that. But far more chickens than what Roy has.
And they just expanded as well.
Yeah. And the one barn, I think, holds more chickens than he'll have.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Bernheide.
Yeah.
Anyone else that would like to speak at public hearing? Anything else from the board at public hearing?
I make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
At 10:53, we'll close public hearing to hear support.
Hey, Eric.
I'm sorry, Mr. Mulder. We will have you come back up before we close. I am sorry. I forgot to have Mr. Mulder come up for rebuttal to anything. And before you do, I had a couple things written down, too. Burn pit, that's very common on ag construction, houses, everything else. They said that the contractor couldn't do that the last time. Do you plan to have any burn pit this time for waste?
No, it's kind of up to the contractor, but I don't plan to.
Ms. Haxby had asked about a tree plan. Do you anticipate any tree plan on this facility?
We kind of frown on trees because of the free-range birds, and predators will either roost in a tree and come down and eat our chickens, or coyotes will hang out, go into the range area, eat the chickens. So I'd love to have a windbreak there because we scoop a lot of snow. But
this year you did?
Not this year, no, but I've got pictures on my phone. Door handle deep.
Just so you know, that may be brought up. Ms. Haxby asked about that. The burning, I know 90% of the construction in the country, everything's burnt. That may be something to avoid some issues with neighbors there.
As Jennifer explained, the air quality people came out, did an inspection. I had to haul it to the landfill. We had primarily wood in there, but there was some metal, and they frowned on that. So we had to destroy.
Emily just sent me a text to make sure a tree plan is implemented. So,
Ms. Haxby will be asking for a tree plan, I'm sure. I don't know what the opinion of the board is on that. I guess go ahead and give us your closing, sir.
Well, Brad said something about a dry pond. Shortly after our planning and zoning meeting, I was farming a farm that's near 9 houses that's pretty close to this, and that pond's dry too. It's supposed to have been 5 acres of water, continuous permanent pool. It's dry. It don't have enough to fill a bathtub in it. So his pond is not the only one that's dry. His is not dry yet, but it is going down. Like Mr. Jurgens said, all of them are. We haven't gotten any help from Mother Nature to fill the ponds or replenish. My irrigation was announced that we got to put meters on. We're going to be limited on irrigation. A lot of the talk is about water. And I think I've proven with statistics where some of the water is going. I don't know is that they had any research done or anything like that. All they know is their pond is dry. I don't know where Mr. Bear gets his stuff about me getting everything on a silver platter. I've been farming since I was 12 years old. My folks are both gone. I did have an inheritance out of that I had to split with my two sisters. Nothing's been handed to me on a platter. I paid for everything. And this is a $6 million project that I'm talking about. So I don't know where the silver platter's at, where the silver spoon's at, where anything's at that he comes up with. But he's inaccurate. But he's under oath, so he's telling you the truth. So I guess you can
take it one way.
I would steer you towards trying to stick to direct issues with the project.
Jennifer, she kind of answered her own questions with the air quality. I did have to dig it up, haul it to the Beatrice landfill, produce receipts to the air quality control people that I did. So I took care of that. The traffic on 38th Road, I'm on the township board. I'm the treasurer. I write the checks. We haven't had to buy any material for 38th Road. We haven't got any complaints in any other areas of Nemaha Township saying we need material. Again, it's been dry for how many years? Our roads are staying in pretty good shape. I have grain structures at my place that hold 130,000 bushels of grain. So we got 130 trucks coming in, 130 trucks going out. 54th doesn't get any special attention. We've got a lot of truck traffic on that. There's other producers in the area that got large grain structures. Their roads don't require anything more, nor do they get special attention. Again, we have Freeman School District, we have Norris School District, we have the post office, we have UPS, FedEx, App, Amazon. Everybody's running the roads. So I don't know how you can say that because of the feed trucks, the road's going to pieces and it's costing more money. Again, I'm on the board. I write the checks. I haven't written any.
That's his one.
Mrs. Keys, I bought the 80 from her dad. I don't know if it wasn't offered to them to be bought or not. I'm not building chicken barns on that particular 80. Her dad approached me when I was harvesting the other quarter that I owned and asked if I'd be interested in buying that 80. I give him the price that he asked for, done deal. So it was for sale, I bought it. Brett's numbers go along with Dennis's numbers. Dennis Rosine, again on the planning and zoning, he did the math on the water usage. It's no more than anybody else's house uses for these eight barns. So if I got to shut down my chicken barns, I guess they're going to have to shut down their house. Well, also, because I use no more water than they do. That's about all I got to say.
Questions for Mr. Mulder?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one comment.
As we're comparing or putting together our exhibits, would you please enter in the application packet as an exhibit to today for the record?
We have to do that outside of hearing, or can we do that in hearing?
Okay.
Or maybe that's an Amanda question.
What's that?
Do we accept the application and all the information inside public hearing or outside public hearing?
I was going to say it should be an exhibit as part of the public hearing.
It was part of your packet as an exhibit. That's what we've done in the past.
So we'll just accept everything, including the
recommendation,
including the recommendation and
the packet.
Oh, doggone it! The list of names, the petition.
The protest petition.
Yeah. It's already been received. The protest petition was received and stamped at the clerk's office already, time dated, and we'll accept it or note that it's accepted. Any other questions for Mr. Mulder? We won't take any action today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I now would ask for a motion to come out of public hearing at 11 o'clock.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Dorn, second by Adams to come out of public hearing at 11 a.m. to hear support or opposition for special use permit 2026-2. I would anticipate this being on our agenda in 2 weeks. You have all the information. If you want to gather any more information, please do so and be prepared in a couple weeks for discussion and a vote on this permit. We have a motion and a second to come out of public hearing at 11 o'clock. Please vote. 5 in favor. Motion carries. We're out of public hearing. We have one more agenda item. Discuss, approve, or disapprove FOP agreement. We have not received an answer on that as of right now, correct? So this is from our attorney. In regards to the last agenda item, I'll read a statement from the attorney. The board is not going to take action today on the proposed agreement with the FOP, as a formal acceptance of the county's final offer has not been received. We appreciate our law enforcement and value their work, and we value their work in the county as demonstrated by previous negotiations. In the years leading up to the start of these negotiations, the county implemented substantial wage increases across all divisions of law enforcement, ensuring compensation remained competitive with comparable counties and to support adequate staffing within the sheriff's office. In developing its final offer, the board carefully evaluated comparables, total compensation, and long-term financial impact on county operations. The county will continue to closely monitor the budget and affect the increased wages, the effects the increased wages will have on day-to-day operations of the sheriff's office, as well as the broader impact on county services. The board remains committed to bringing this process to a conclusion. Page County has presented its final offer and believes it reflects a fair and responsible outcome. We will remain ready to move forward upon acceptance. If an agreement is not reached, our next step will be to proceed to the Commission of Industrial Relations for a final resolution. The final offer was submitted. Ms. Hackstrom, myself, and Ms. Hill listened in to recommendations from our labor attorneys. I think we went through and we met all the critical points, as well as going above and beyond on others for compensation package for our FOP. Now the ball is in their court. All we can do is wait and see what they come back to us with. So we hope for the best. If not, we'll go to Commission of Industrial Relations, and they'll make the determination for us instead of through a negotiation process between the law enforcement wing and ourselves. Anything else for the good of the order for our meeting? I appreciate the participation and attendance by everyone. With that, we will adjourn at 11:04.